It's the Great Music Debate with our hosts, Beener and Weevil. Now, here's Beener and Weevil.
Certainly all rolling.
Welcome back to the anniversary show, part deux.
Part deux.
The first part was dominated by arguments.
Yes,
with a debate.
It is the great debate after all.
That was a great debate. I don't know how great it is. I guess that's up for you all to let us know.
I saw the wrinkles in your forehead getting very prominently displayed.
I'll know by the downloads.
if you were a rattlesnake, it would have been overcome with rattling sounds.
I would have bit you an hour ago.
Well, that's all over. It's time for fun.
All right, we're gonna get on to some other things here. We were discussing some stuff from our youth.
Yes,
and I want to play something in particular that I'm not sure if this is what you heard as a kid, but this sounds to me like what you used to describe to me in our youth. So I want you to pull up the Yoko file.
Can I do a quick plug first?
Yeah, plug something.
I'm drinking Weevil's Evil Bean Brew, and
yes.
It's lovely.
Yes,
it keeps me afloat.
Facebook.com/Weevil's Evil Bean Brew.
So I've given you the song that you asked for.
All right, just that link. You can go there, and all the ordering info is available.
Is this the song you were?
Yes, this is a live jam. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. Did you ever see that Stones Rock and Roll Circus?
No.
Okay.
Is that the documentary?
They released it on DVD.
On
no, it's not a documentary. It's a show they did, and it's like a bunch of special guests: the Stones, the Who, all kinds of crazy people.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
And they all like this is a jam with Lennon and some other people, and
sounds
you'll hear
Lennon-y.
Who's singing in a minute.
It sounds very Lennon-y.
Yes, it is very Lennon-y.
let's hear that.
Do you know who's singing yet?
Yeah, well, I have to admit. Well, it's not John.
No.
That's not John, it's not Paul. It's not
I think
Mick.
George was there.
Oh, goodness. Well, I cheated because I see it in the file.
I don't know.
But yes, that's the wonderful...
Drop it back a little, I guess, or...
That's the one and only Yoko. Oh, good grief.
Beetle killer.
All right. Now, wait a minute. No, I don't want to get into our last argument, because we already had that argument.
It gets better.
It's so bad. But you know...
All right.
Now listen.
I am listening.
I'm going to try my best. I'm going to try my best not to go into our last argument.
Yeah.
But by the standards of our last argument, John Lennon gave us Yoko. He said, listen, everyone, here's Yoko. All right? He did what you would want, right?
Yeah.
Take something that's not commercially, obvious.
I wouldn't
and
have
give
never
it to everyone.
Wanted this.
But he gave it to everyone, and look what we got. And we rejected it, and he kept jamming it down our throats.
Well,
and we kept saying, no, not interested. And guess what? Nobody goes around listening to Yoko. Have you ever heard a Yoko song other than some of John was
let's
on?
Let's look at the real profound concept to this. Is
how horrible. I mean, is she intending to be horrible?
Yeah.
I honestly wonder. Like, I'd like to look her
she
in the eye
supposedly...
and say, are you serious?
I don't know
do
if
you
this
not
was,
know this is ridiculous?
I don't know if this is Lennon's dry humor to
I don't think it
interject
was.
This into everything.
I don't think it
but,
was. I think it was
think
him saying, like, oh, it's a painting.
You're Paul McCartney. You wrote Yesterday. You wrote Hey Jude. And now this woman has to be at all your friggin' rehearsals
no.
and starts telling you guys what you should do?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I don't care if it's John.
I understand
you
why
put up for that about a week.
Up. Yeah.
And I don't think Paul did. I think
See,
that's why,
I must have looked at the wrong version. Because I have a version of this.
Oh, I don't want to hear
another
version of
this. Where I dumped some stuff over it, and it doesn't seem to be on this version.
Well, I don't think you could have made this any more irritating or grating. You don't need to make it any more funny, because it's ridiculous.
Well, what
no,
I was doing
can
is
I
was doing
I'm
this.
Bringing it down. That's all it's missing. A dog howling is all that's missing.
guys I used to work with used to do that to
make
me
it
when
go
I was.
Away.
You know how you like you sing while you're working? You just be like, you'll have
you
a song in your head.
You work?
Well, no, because I'm not a good whistler.
Right.
But you know, you'll be singing, you know, just through and throughout the day. And that's what this guy Earl I used to do. I used to work with. He used to every time I'd sing while I was working, he'd start doing that.
Thing. That is truly awful.
That was horrifying.
But you know, and I hear you. What does Paul say? You know, and that's why Paul opted for.
I'm leaving
inside these four walls. Inside forever.
He
opted for that for a reason.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That is awful.
I to think that he had to have her with him for like everything, and that obviously became a big rift.
Well, as the guitar decided to leave by itself. You know, it's so obvious. It's almost like, you know, you have a nice cheeseburger and somebody comes and spreads on like coffee grounds. It's just like, why would you even try?
Broken egg
shell. Why would you put...
What the hell was that?
And I think that was John, you know, looked up to Yoko for so many reasons. She was important to him for so many reasons. And it wasn't... It almost... Yeah, you know, actually, now I think about it, I want to say it probably had to do with how bad she was musically. Because... You know how many adoring, gorgeous women who knew the Beatles, loved the Beatles, and maybe even were talented and could sing? And
well, like his first wife.
In other words, the kind of women...
Well, did he have a wife before Yoko?
Cynthia.
Yeah.
No, I don't know about how Cynthia was, but I don't think she was a big like fan either.
Yeah.
I'm saying he could have had the typical type of girlfriend you would picture for him, or wife that you picture, that would be
like... He could
like,
have any woman in the world.
Right, he could have any woman in the world. But you would picture somebody who might
he
be... Like, look at Linda. Okay, Linda was musical. I don't care what anybody says.
Linda came from such a prestigious background that she could rival certain aspects of his, you know, levels of his fame at the time.
Right, she could... Exactly.
She didn't need his money.
No, she had the Eastman
Kodak. She had the Kodak Eastman money.
Right.
And she was such an accomplished photographer, I think, at the time.
She was an accomplished photographer. But I personally think she was musical.
She
I know people make fun of her voice and everything, but I like her input in wind.
Yeah, she was part of the band.
And so that's what you might picture. And so John, I think there was a charm to Yoko's bizarre, like... The fact that she couldn't decipher, obviously she couldn't, I don't think she was doing that to be annoying. I think she couldn't honestly decipher music. She,
yeah.
Like anybody who would go, and think that that was good, you know, and then he must have found that charming, that she was like a little kid trying to sing to the radio or something. I don't know. Either way, for him, it's great. But for them... Oh, my God.
Oh.
Even Ringo had to be saying, you can't sing.
We already got one bad singer in the band.
That's enough. But I think
what's with the
they
troll?
Were going to break up anyway.
Yeah. They were all falling apart.
But to impose this woman on her, it's a bit much to impose on anyone. And even on the Double Fantasy record, which is loaded with incredible John Lennon
that'd
songs
be like,
I love, she wrecks that thing. You know, every other song is her doing those
kiss,
horrible...
Kiss, kiss, kiss me, love.
Oh, good.
Kiss. Why me? Why you? That's the best she could do, I guess.
I think to her that, you know, she thought she had something.
I look at it like
and
this.
And he thought she had something.
Could you imagine if I showed up for work with you Monday for the rest of the week and every day I told you how to do your job?
Well, you know, that's usually what work is like, actually.
And with
job,
ways
but...
like, why don't you wear Burger King crown on your head while you work? People will think it's cool.
And imagine if I thought everything you said was gold and did it.
Then Jen would have to shoot me and you.
Well, that was the end of the Beatles.
That was the end.
It was a fitting end, don't you think? I mean, if you want to kill it, just kill it in style.
I've said this very inappropriate theory before, but I still think that it was a timing issue that Mark Chapman screwed up and thought Yoko was coming out first.
So depressing.
Yeah, it is. And we're coming up on that season, actually.
So depressing.
His anniversary, Dimebag Darrell's anniversary, and Pearl Harbor all in the same week.
Mm. Yeah, it's really depressing, Jones, losing John.
I had so many things originally for this show. I don't know what you might want to do. We could continue
folk
with...
Folk songs?
We could do folk songs.
Long time ago.
Oh, where
I can
moved
still
your,
remember how that your, music used to make me
crow.
Smile. I knew if I had my chance that I
I could find my broken glass.
And perhaps.
Perhaps.
They'd be happy for a while.
Oof. Yearn.
Yearn.
Yearn. I don't want to sing that.
February made me shiver.
So much it hurt my liver.
That's not what's hurting your liver. Bad news on the doorstep.
I can't find it.
Couldn't take one more step.
Oh, okay.
It's in the bottom.
I can't remember if I cried.
Are you really going to do it? Could you do a verse?
When I read about his widow bride. I don't know where you are.
Yes, I'm there.
But something touched me deep inside. I called the police in time.
Wrong chord. Died.
So we were singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and beer, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. Oh, this is where I get to kick my shoes off and dance.
Yes. Helter Skelter in the Summer Swell.
See, this song reminds me of my father's apartment in Little Ferry, right by the airport, right by Teterboro Airport.
My sister and
I used to hear that.
Lived over there.
And we used to play Parcheesi.
That's some heavy times right there. Good times. That song always reminded me of some memory. I heard that song driving with one of my older cousins and a friend of hers. And I do believe I was in the back seat of their car, and I always remember connecting the line, you know, the Chevy.
Yeah.
You know, drove my Chevy to the levee, and I always remember not knowing what a levee
was. I was just a little kid.
But, you know, it's funny how songs, I don't know if anything else does. Sometimes movies are like this, and sometimes pictures are like this, but songs
music
capture moments and burn them into your memory
in a way that you hear them again,
and you're there.
I'm trying to think of what that book was I was reading, that audiophonics book or whatever it was or something like that. It's, the guy was talking about his research into the connection that music has with people. I know we did, I think we did a show about it, a PIBCO show about it, about that book.
It must have something to do with the fact that when you reproduce the music, it's in motion, so you're hearing it. It's not like a snapshot. It's in motion. It's moving, and it's exactly like it was when you first heard it.
Yeah.
So you almost are reliving the moment.
It's in that same principle. Like, you can smell something that'll bring you back to something.
Smells can be like that, too.
Smells are very connected to your memory.
You smell somebody's house, it smells like soup.
Yeah.
You go,
and what they're finding with music is that people have an innate sense of music. Like, they really can't figure out whether you learn music before you learn how to speak or anything, because babies will show evidence of timing and beat, and like, they'll actually understand rhythm before they know how to talk.
I know some babies who don't know rhythm.
Yeah. We all know some people, but just in general.
I struggle with rhythm myself.
Well, think about it. Your whole biological system is based on a steady heartbeat.
That's right.
It's basically a metronome.
And your timer is in your nose.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No.
The timer for your heart is actually in your nose.
Really?
It's true. So don't cut your nose off.
You have a big heart.
Well, it's not in your nose, but it's in your, it's around your nose.
I made a nose joke.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school.
That's a camera song.
I wonder I can't think at all. Even my lack of education.
I only know the choruses.
Oh, I respect you to sing. I can read the writing
on the wall. Kodachrome. If it's nice bright colors, if it's the green of summers, you think could you see all the world.
Let's start that again.
The world on
I'm
going to
count on you for that. Ready?
Day. Oh,
again,
yeah.
Again, start from the beginning.
I got. You're killing me.
I can wonder, I can think at all.
That's the wrong part.
And though my lack of has inert me done. I can read the writing on the wall.
Take a low part.
Kodachrome. Give us the nice bright colors. Give us the green of summers. You can see all I got a knock on camera of the take photographs. Oh, mama, don't take my Kodachrome away.
See, my problem is I really can't do harmonies. I could just imitate certain parts of the melody, and sometimes that jumps between the highs and the low. And
it's okay to move. I had the wrong chord, so.
Yeah, but for like you to try and follow me on a harmony, I could be bouncing between both registers just because that's how I remember the song.
It's quite all right.
And I can't really sing.
Slip sliding away.
Nah, don't go there. Don't go there. I think we should go into a song from our youth.
A song from our youth you want?
Yeah. I was thinking Carnival 9.
Oh, that's easy to play. That'll be cake. There's a real cakewalk.
I mean, pop it up. There's some things that we could talk about.
All right, you like to hear Carnival 9? You will.
Well. Is it recording this time?
Yeah, this time it's recording.
We just had the greatest conversation.
Yeah, we started this song.
But
we
for once, I didn't screw something up.
No, it was me. Beaner screwed it up. I forgot to hit the right button, and we just had this very in-depth conversation about this song.
All right.
And we didn't record it. But, you know, I just want to at least say what I said back there. The point of it was this song, as I had said like 80 times, it's majestic.
Yes.
And it evokes, I heard it when I was a little kid. When I was about 9 years old, I was introduced to this with the rest of ELP and Pink Floyd. And it was majestic, and it invoked feelings of a court, of a kingdom, of a flags and horses, and it freaked me out. I was transported into wherever this song takes you. And it's also the moodiness of it, along with, like, it wasn't that just when it's majestic and kind of royal, but it was also that, like, listen to the melody of it. That
that's by design. They were looking, I mean, let's... maybe first frame this by saying what the concept of this song is. Basically, this song, Carnival 9, is three parts that, you know, basically is, if you really look at lyrically as a whole, the first part, the first impressions, part one and part two,
right,
are basically about this life that we all know being such degraded history that it was museum worthy to show a blade of grass. You know, here behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Because basically, they put how bad mankind has denigrated the earth into a carnival, I guess, presentation approach for that. But it's all about basically the fall of man and the fight between man and technology. And that's where this song comes in.
This is the third impression.
Yeah, the third, because the second impression is just an incredible
jam. But see,
the other
ones have a lot of power.
Yeah.
And as I said before in our non-recorded version, Greg Lake is as good a bass player as he is a guitar player, and he's fantastic at both. I don't even know, as I said before, he's the only... I don't know another musician where I can't decide whether he's a bass player or a guitar player. But he's so great at both.
He was a great bass player. I mean, he's just a very good guitar player.
He's a great guitar
well.
player, a melodically good guitar player, classically good guitar player, and good with solos.
No computer stands in my way.
This is the conflict part. You didn't tell what this song was about.
Well, I was starting
which
to.
Is the computer versus man, and the computer takes over because we made it too perfect.
We made it so says, powerful, it starts to assist, which is all Terminator.
Right.
Total Recall. You know, 2000. I think this song was born out of 2001. Space Odyssey.
And I don't know the story well, but I know it. I mean, I know what the story is, but I didn't...
It's basically, the concept is very similar. The computer governs everything.
I have to just listen to that.
If that fanfare.
If you can't feel that, I don't know. And that too. There's a melancholy here that I love. Or I often say melancholy, which I don't mean sadness.
Well, that's what it means, though.
I know, but what I mean to say is there's a mid, like, purgatory type of feeling to this part of the song. It's not jubilant. It's not.
See, to me, it is. This is.
Well, it is kind of jubilant.
This is, we're marching into battle. We're going to face this machine that is now starting to try and oppress us.
But what I feel during this part is almost like Sunday afternoon raining.
Right,
nothing's happening.
I'm going strictly.
But
from
I'm stuck. Like I'm engrossed. I can't not listen to that. It sounds beautiful to me.
Well, I think it's important to specify what the lyrics are setting up. The beginning of the song was man talking about how it was rising back to power to defy the machines that they had created, which have now taken control and are threatening to eliminate mankind because right. it's inferior. And that's the premise of this, and it's also the premise of a lot of the sci-fi movies that we just mentioned.
And the three impressions of Carnival 9, Impression 1, Impression 2, Impression 3, they are all a story.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the same theme.
I think so. I think that Carnival 9 first impression sets up, you know, what mankind has been reduced to. I mean, did you see Idiocracy?
No.
It reminds me of that. In a sense that, like, man got gradually dumber because they just got ruled by convenience and things like that. I mean, it's a little bit different in this context. But, I mean, we're also talking about 1973.
Right.
These concepts must be they're so far-fetched at that time.
This and you had mentioned before that you said that I brought this to you musically, which I forgot about that because, yeah, I did know this before I met you.
I didn't know this record. My mother had Tarkus, Trilogy, and Pictures at an Exhibition.
Had you heard them?
Yeah, I used to listen to those records.
Oh, wow.
But you brought me this record, and this changed a lot. I mean, Tarkus was a big influence. And then this hit me.
This record, particularly this song, this is my favorite song by ELP. And it's different than the other two impressions in the mood. Like here...
Yeah. Well, this is the conflict.
In the middle,
it's
in the conflict part. This sounds like I said before, the nightly news.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds kind of...
So this sounds like battle to me.
Like, this is not give me goosebumps, this part. It sounds like it should. It's somewhat chaotic.
Yeah.
But the melodic parts of the song, the beginning and the end, and when the next part that's melodic coming, the rejoice, glory is ours.
Yeah. Well, right here...
Yeah, it gives me goosebumps.
Right here... To me, this is mankind regrouping and mounting whatever big counterattack to overcome the machines.
Which is pretty, I mean, that's like very cerebral.
Yeah.
You know, well, it usually isn't for me.
It thematically fits to me.
It does. So. But I'm saying the feeling and the emotion in this particular song.
Yeah.
They're unequaled. I mean, I can't think of anything that...
It's hard to find music that...
The only thing that moves like this is Yes.
Yeah,
where they take you to these heights of different kind of like,
I'd put Rush in that bracket.
Rush can do it too,
and Voivod comes a little close. Yeah, they've got some concept records that I think come very close to this type of thing.
I don't know them.
I can show you that sometime.
But I mean, like, there are bands that you think of doing that, like Kansas or Jethro Tull, but I don't know that they.
Well, Voivod has a record, Killing Technology.
This is the part where I think of Dr. Smith of Lost in Space.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
The machines.
The machines.
Oh, the Earth. Oh,
well, Killing Technology has a great part in it about space, like space, kind of like our, what's that thing up there?
A satellite?
No, the the space station.
Oh.
The International Space.
Right.
Like, something on that kind of principle. Here, man has overcome.
Right.
They're about to crush the computer. But,
wait, Carl Palmer. The great.
Notice how he switches the pitch there?
No.
It's...
No.
Yeah, he alternates.
Oh, wait, this part. Oh.
Yeah.
How huge is that?
Yeah. Well, this is where mankind thinks that they've won and they're vindicated.
Their graves need no flowers. Their tapes have recorded their names.
Yes. Like, dude, what did you fight for? The computer's still in control, as we come to learn here. We thought we won.
Right.
But isn't that going on a lot in life now? We think we win these little battles. Oh, we won that big election. Your healthcare still sucks.
Oh, boy. You don't want to get started there. No. I don't see that. I don't... It's not what I get out of this fight. Like, you know the cover of Hemispheres?
Yeah.
Or the theme of Rush, which is man versus...
The establishment.
The establishment.
Yeah.
That's what I get out of that.
Well, yeah.
But it's not even...
But
actually,
what is your establishment
completely
now?
Yet.
But what is your establishment now? Everything is controlled by computers.
It's not exactly what... Well, okay. But
that's not exactly what
I get. Well, but what I get out of this more is computers are a quandary of their own. And that once we realized we can make really powerful computers that can do things we can't, then that obvious question came about is, are they going to start thinking for themselves? And so we have another technical difficulty. It's a day of technical difficulties on show two.
Did the song end on the playback?
What happened was, I don't know why, but right at the end of that song, it cut our voices off. So right after that point, boom, done. So you had made that whole point about war games.
The analogy. I think it was a much more fitting analogy, just that to design a computer that could learn from mistakes and then learn how to anticipate their opponent's next move.
Which we do have.
Yes. Well, this was in the beginning of all that. You figure the movie was made in the middle 80s. But just that's this concept, I think, with the song, is that, you know, we've created a computer so powerful that it rendered us no longer, you know, worth or you know,
right.
we became
obsolete,
a liability that it needed to eradicate due to our imperfection. And, you know, of course, they rise up and fight it, and they think they won, but the computer is still really in control, as you hear from the end. And that mirrors a lot of today's life, if you ask me.
That's, and I know that is your viewpoint, the one when you were starting to make that point, that and you're almost going to go real political.
Yeah.
But, I don't quite look at it that way. I look at it as just sort of like a simple danger. You give something so much power, it can turn you. It's like the classic example of Satan. God makes Lucifer so very powerful, the second most powerful being he makes other than himself, and it turns to evil, and it becomes Satan. So, like, that's the risk you run of creating something with so much power.
Okay.
It just popped out. Sorry to go biblical on you. It was that song. It's very biblical, as you said.
With the Easter Bunny.
You know, the Easter Bunny, you know, it's an evil egg. No, but that's...
I have got to deliver all these eggs.
I'm saying that that's the point I get out of the song, that if you go too far in creating something powerful...
We already have.
It can...
That's the scary part, because right now...
But it's inevitable, isn't it?
I don't know.
Well, it is inevitable.
But we've made our bed as far as that goes. I mean, when you think about it, all somebody in a particular place has to do is type something in a computer, dude, and you got no credit. You got, like, you know, you could be effectively wiped off the map with just a few keystrokes.
But it's inevitable in the sense that growth, once you introduce the idea of growth, it's inevitable. Again, I'll go biblical on you. When Adam and Eve... or in the garden, all is peaceful, all is well. They're naked, but don't know or don't care. And God tells them they can eat from the tree of life, which is just more good. Everything's good. Or there's a tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat from that one, he tells them. Because if you do, you'll die. And of course, it's inevitable that they do because it's there. They want to know. And then the serpent, of course, comes and convinces them it's good. You won't die. You'll live forever. You'll be like God. And they're consumed by that idea. Like, oh, really? We might be like God. And they're very curiosity.
You're on the verge of opening up a whole big can of worms here.
The only point I'm making here is that it's inevitable that if you open a door... If you say there's a door, people want to open it. It's inevitable.
I think these are two completely
different
concepts.
That you're
going
to open doors.
I don't think that works in this application. Just because with religion, the whole design
I'm
of religion.
Not talking about religion.
Well, you're being biblical about
it. But that's not religion.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. It was an allegory.
It was a religious allegory.
I'm not talking about religion.
I think the base concept
of
it.
I brought a part of a religion.
Yes.
But that's not the point of what I was saying. My point was that it's inevitable that if you give someone choice, then it's inevitable that the risk is they make wrong choices.
Yeah.
And so if you give somebody technology, it's inevitable that you run some risks that
I think
go foul.
I disagree in the sense that we're talking about technology that has become so advanced that it renders us obsolete. It takes us out of the loop. I think that's different.
Well, that's a bad result.
Yeah.
That's the bad result you hope you don't get.
Yeah.
But that's
all
the
right.
risk you
that's
take.
That's fair
to have,
enough.
To have the option to grow, you have to have those risks, too. Because if you put a cap on it, okay, we can explore, but just not too far. You can't do that.
Well, I mean, that's the whole basic principle behind religion, is to not explore, is to take everything on faith and to basically not question.
It's actually
that,
not.
That's kind of a big religious doctrine to me.
Well, you know, I mean, which I agree
is why
with you. I agree
which
with
is why
you.
We're having some of the
there
trouble.
Is,
with,
I agree with you that in practice, that's what happens. In practice, people decide that...
I mean, here's where
it's
we're
bad dead. To think.
We're dancing on the edge of political because I just watched one of the either representatives in Congress or one of the senators say that mankind is not going to destroy the earth. God will end the earth when God is going to end it, and it's, you know, mankind will have nothing to do with that, which is I think woefully ignorant.
Well,
to say.
Like most things, it's a dual reality, isn't it? I mean, if it's true that God will end the earth, it doesn't stand to reason necessarily that it won't be through the doing of man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's obvious that man can do it. Man can do it today.
Man is in the process of doing it.
Right, and can do it.
But to the greater point there is, we'll be gone. We won't destroy the earth. The earth will be here. Whatever.
Maybe not.
for the earth to take 17 billion years to come back and be, you know, sustainable for life again, that's only like a week to the universe.
Right. What does the universe care?
Yeah. I mean, we're already...
Of course, the universe is sort of doomed in any way because at a certain point, the sun will burn out.
Yeah. Well, that's some of the really interesting
theoretically,
concepts.
It will eventually burn out.
That they're figuring out that the universe is still expanding. It's still growing. So it's eventually going to disperse to a level that, you know, it'll extinguish... You know, like the type of life that we have now. But when you look at mankind as a whole, like the 10 to 20,000 years that man has walked the earth, it's really like a blink of an eye in the scope of the universe. But then you get into the religious arguments that the earth was created 6,000 years ago and that, you know, there's that museum in Kansas where people are walking with dinosaurs. It's just not factually credible as to where I think, you know, maybe back in biblical times, they weren't ready to accept the idea that the earth could be this old.
Well, right.
So.
Well, why would they?
Yeah. There was no proof of it to them then.
Right. There wasn't enough knowledge to come up with that at the time.
I think if I'm going to give God or other people's concept of God any credit, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that he could create science too. For these reasons that we evolved, like just because God made man and they made it one paragraph in Genesis, maybe that was like, you know what? I really could write about how I started with these friggin' tadpoles, but these people are going to think I'm fucking nuts.
They might not be ready for that.
So maybe we'll just, you know, I made you from a particle. It wasn't particularly the rib. Maybe it was some molecules, but you're not going to understand that. You don't even know how to rub sticks together and make fire yet.
Well, I mean, look, people are made of particles, but they don't constantly look at themselves as a collection of particles.
True.
You know, I mean, you have hands, but actually they're just a bunch
acid.
Of particles. The only difference between your hands and the air is a different arrangement of particles.
Yeah, and how they hum, how they vibrate.
Right. So, I mean, if you're going to break it down like that, but there's a certain amount of faith involved in doing that.
Like, sure.
You have a lot of faith that your hand will stay intact, even though theoretically it could just dissolve because it's just particles moving around that could just change.
I think it's fair to have faith that
you have no choice. You have to have faith
to take a step. That whatever created whatever, you know, it was a gradual thing, and you know, it's certainly acceptable. I don't understand. You know, I think it's encouraging that there are more religious. I'm going to say that word again. Sects.
You just want to say sex because you want ratings. That's
more
clear.
Religious denominations.
You're making it
that
very
little,
obvious.
That are a little more open to accepting science as God gave us the intelligence to figure this shit out on our own.
Right, but that is a level of freedom that one individual may have over another, and I think that's where people err, is that people decide what they're comfortable with, and then they decide that everyone else should be comfortable with what they're comfortable with. And I think that's where the mistake is made. Because you, like, to get biblical on you again, the Apostle Paul said, I'll see if I can remember. He said, you know, I'm going to have to paraphrase because I don't remember exactly what he said. But he said, you know, to one person, eating something is okay. To another person, it's evil to eat a certain thing. But, you know, to each his own. To that person who says it's evil to eat this, don't eat it. To this person who doesn't feel it's evil to eat that, then eat it. Because it's not what goes into you that defiles a man. Maybe Jesus said that. It's what comes out of you. So in other words, just because you have the freedom, let's say, to look at science and include that in your concept of God, you don't have to enforce that on someone else who can't handle that.
But unfortunately, I think that's where the big
problem
lays.
But they shouldn't enforce on you.
Yeah, well, that's where
you can't have science?
Yeah.
Because,
that's,
you know,
where the problems lie.
That's where the problems lie, is that each of us has different perspectives and each of us has a different capacity to how we're
going to
view
recording
things.
This, right?
Yes, this time we're actually recording. Yeah, okay. This is only three times did we think we were recording today and weren't. But, you know, the point is, ultimately, is that we all have our limited view.
Sure.
And we're all banking on our limited view.
We're all barely up.
Nobody has the whole picture.
No, of course not.
So the thing I think we should do is just not try to enforce our limited view on someone else's limited view. Just accept, you know, we got to live together. If you want to believe that evolution, I mean, personally, I don't deny that the world evolved scientifically. I happen to think that the world evolving is part of God's doing. In other words, God set things in motion and they
that makes more sense to me than what
and I don't think that
a lot of other people
I don't think anything
say.
In the Bible discounts that either. I just think it was given as an account as it was understood at the time. You know? And the point is not how the world was made. That's not the point. The point isn't God made the world with big hands. That's not the point. The point is that God was first, that there was God, that there was God before there was things. That's the point.
Well, and
that God intended us to be. That's also a point. It doesn't matter whether it took 6 billion years or 6 years or 6 days. It doesn't matter. That's not really what's important. It's a miracle either way, right? I mean,
sure.
It would take a God. It would take our concept of God to do
whatever
such a
that
thing.
May be.
Right, whatever it may be. Let's face it. The highest thing you can think of, that's about as close to God as you're going to get, is the highest thing you can think of.
I suppose.
The most evolved, highest form you can conceive, that's only close to what God is.
Sure.
If God is.
We've had that conversation before about the,
did we mention music today? Not a whole hell of a lot.
not much.
I should have pulled out the guitar more.
I think we've done enough damage.
You think we've done
psyche.
Enough damage?
Yeah, I think so.
I can play this?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to play a major. Sorry.
I wouldn't know a major or a minor.
Or bye.
I don't know things by that way. All righty. Well, thanks for putting up with this.
Yeah, it was fun though.
It was a fun mess of a day. Yeah,
it was fun arguing with you.
And hopefully, we will have a Christmas show.
Fun.
We got a month to get a Christmas show
with
done.
You.
Think we can pull that rabbit out of the hat?
A Christmas show.
Yeah.
I don't know any Christmas songs.
Well,
yeah. No, we'll try. We're working on the once a month. Episode.
I would hope.
We'll see if we can manage to do that.
But obviously you're here on thegreatdebate.podomatic.com. Come back once, come back twice, come back often.
Come back again. Oh, no.